I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. This week brought to you by Four Men and Jamie.
Yeah, that'll do.
Hey, that's a good point. I listened to last week's this morning. When did we get sponsored by Vodafone and why have I not seen any of that cashish?
Where's that mobile cash?
Well, moving on, let's find out what's on today. On today's podcast, the adverts that you may hear, Matthew, are courtesy of Acast, the brilliant company that hosts our podcast. And those adverts get shared across a number of podcasts, and based on the number of listeners you get a share of the ever anything shared, right? And
so we should all get like a penny or 2p each.
Well, our rolling total as of the last 12 months came in today. The rolling total is £7.85. Unfortunately, that doesn't reach the threshold for payment, which is £100. So we've got another probably 80 years to wait before we can all share that spoils.
Something to look forward to.
What should we do with it?
That can count as that. That'll be fine.
But if there's ever an incentive to tell all of your friends, even the ones who are fans of theatre, Matthew, to listen to this podcast, then that's it. Yeah?
Could we not just tell current listeners to listen to it two or three times each?
That's a better idea.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
There's a lot of stuff you miss first time you listen to it, isn't there?
Definitely. Yeah. We should put more Easter eggs in episodes. Figurative ones, not actual ones. But
I've got one right now.
Oh, there you go.
Have you really? Is that what wine are you having with it? I'm getting a Merlot.
You can't really combine a wine with white chocolate.
Oh, it's a white chocolate Easter egg.
It's a challenge. Studio at theboxsetpod.com.
Yeah, there you go.
Email your white chocolate pairing wines.
I tried to buy an Easter egg at Marks and Spencer's, and I went to till and it was £12. So I took it back and bought one for £4 instead.
£12? What was it?
£12 for an Easter egg. It was shaped like a chicken, so it was quite it's quite a new.
So it wasn't an Easter egg.
It's an Easter chicken.
I see your point.
I've had a hell of an Easter weekend with literally overflowing with actual Easter bunnies in the burrows. Oh my god, I was at the vets for an entire day with one of them. I was force feeding one of them at midnight. What were you doing on your bank holiday? I was force feeding a rabbit at midnight.
Have you heard that they showed Watership Down on Channel 5 on Saturday and loads of parents complained to Channel 5?
They showed it again on Monday as well.
Oh, did they? Yeah, it's one of the most brutal films ever made.
It's harrowing. That film is harrowing.
It's an amazing film. It's actually quite realistic as well once you get to know rabbits. Rabbits that don't know each other, they're pretty brutal towards each other. What time did they show it?
Mid-afternoon.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, of course it's fine. What are we doing with these children?
We grew up watching Watership Down on TV in the daytime.
Adam's got about 4 speech impediments and was bald from the age of 7, but what harm did it do him?
You know, there's a bit in that movie, I was watching it yesterday, and where it's like they're about to do the breakout of Ephrathah, and Bigwig distracts a guard. And then when he looks and sees all the rabbits escaping, he just knocks him into a tunnel. It goes quiet for a minute, and then Bigwig just comes out. Right. And I was just thinking, did he just kill him?
Yeah.
He just ripped his throat out.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because you can't really knock a rabbit out, can you? Mm. Or at least one rabbit can't knock another rabbit out.
Can't they? Well, I'm sure.
Back legs, plenty of... Because those massive back legs, if they accidentally hoof another rabbit, that out cold, gone.
dead.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, there's not really the rabbit equivalent of a cosh to the back of the head, is there?
No, it's just any part of the head. Poof! Gone. Vicious creatures. And wonderful pets. So,
is there the potential for the Easter Bunny to be a real bastard?
Is the Easter Bunny, if he's got to know the other bunnies, would be excellent. To people, he would be good, and to most other things, he'd just be scared. But if it was another rabbit, the Easter Bunny would be an absolute shit bag. That's a fact. Hutch was invented by the French to fatten them up before they ate them. True fact. On tonight's podcast, we're going to be talking 30 Rock. We're also going to be talking about the sad and sudden passing of Gary Shandling, who, despite being on one of the best internet series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, very recently, looking great, passed away. Really sad. So, we're going to deal with those things. First, let me introduce you to everybody 25 minutes in. We've got Jamie, the regular co-host. There he is. We've got the internet department, Adam, who's sat in his palace in northern Manchester. We've got Matthew Wandless, who, for the same price as the palace that Adam's in, is sitting in his terraced house in probably Stoke Newington. That's where I imagine.
Bounce green, but close.
Is it very close? And Tiernan Dewey, well, he's a stand-up comic, so I'm guessing he's more Elephant and Castle than Stoke Newington.
No, you'd be wrong. Tiernan is less than a mile from me.
And I'm nearer to Stoke Newington than Matt is. So
Jesus, but you're renting, yeah?
Yeah, but I'm renting, yeah, right, in a crappy flat full of damp and cold.
Great, sorted. In fact, you're in Matt's basement, aren't you?
I'm here with all the rabbits. I've been trapped for weeks.
That's a lot of
to keep you there and make you do sort of badly timed comic stand-up sets.
I'm having to test what drinks work with white chocolate eggs. I'm currently on Bovril. I've been through vinegar, various different juices. It's horrible. It's really horrible.
And he can go home when he gets it right.
Over a night without Matt shouting down the stairs, comedy for wine. Comedy for wine. Okay, Christian Talbot, another comedian from Ireland, may join us shortly as well. Let's go first to heavy breathing Jamie Atherton with the latest box set pod news, which you can see online.
Yeah, a couple of little bits just wanted to mention. First of all, was anyone a fan of the comic book or the cartoon series of The Tick?
Yes.
Never heard of it.
Yes. It was brilliant. The cartoon was actually brilliant, and I did read a comic as well, which is very good, a while ago. That was nice. But Amazon Studios are adapting this comic book, and they've got Peter Serafinowicz to play the Tick. If you don't know who he is, then he's been in Space. He's been in Spy recently. He was also in Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. He got a good chin on him, very solid chin. Amazing impression of Paul McCartney. And he will be playing the Tick, and creator Ben Edlund will be writing and producing. It's a very surreal parody of superheroes. It's well timed with all the superhero films around, but not in the style of Deadpool, which I saw recently. And have you seen it? It's good, isn't it?
Not remember me slagging it off?
Did you slag it off?
Well, it was the week that Zoolander 2 was out. Did you go and watch that?
Oh, no.
Jesus Christ, you don't listen to a word, do you? There was those two things, and I'd been to see both, and Zoolander 2 was by far better.
Deadpool, I liked it.
I like Deadpool.
It was fine, but it was one note. It was just cynical, the whole thing. It was too easy. Big budget.
Okay, well, the Tick it takes the mickey out of the superhero world, but in a very sort of different way to that, but it's excellent, funny stuff coming out.
One of the bad guys in the cartoon was the Swiss Army, who had giant Swiss Army knives on their backs that would occasionally pull out helicopters or guns or swords. It was incredible, absolutely brilliant.
I like it. Did you guys like footnote Guardians of the Galaxy as well?
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
I thought it was okay.
I wonder if now I've watched... Yeah, I thought it was okay. I wonder if now I've fallen in love with Parks and Rec that there is a layer to the comedy of Chris Pratt that I didn't previously get. I don't know. I just thought it was a bit like...
I don't think there is. Guardians of the Galaxy never really made me laugh out loud. No, Deadpool did in a couple of places, though.
I have a terrible, unnecessary Marvel bias where I just like everything that's Marvel, even if it's terrible. I can't see that it's bad.
Well,
can't see it.
Good, good. No, it's good to be that positive, and I'm almost ashamed that I'm in Matt's camp on this one. So carry on with the news, Jamie.
Not much else, but I do want to mention that the BBC are remaking some classic sitcoms, including Till Death Do Us Part, which has got the fast show Simon Day taking the role of Alf Garnett,
right.
Steptoe and Son, and Hancock's Half Hour. Don't worry, they're only doing one-off specials for like a special remake of some legendary sitcom season that they're doing. And they're gonna sort of recreate some of the lost episodes of these hit shows, but the issue, of course, with Till Death Do Us Part is it has a lot of racism.
Yeah.
So they've got to bypass that if they're going to use an old script.
Sorry, Jamie, I know you work for the BBC, so you can't comment, but it does seem like a classic BBC corner to put yourself in that. Let's bring back Alf Garnett, but remove the racism. So everyone will either say that we've been too PC or we're cashing in on a racist show. I don't really. It better be good.
Have you seen who's playing in the Porridge one?
Sorry, go on, Tiernan.
Because they're remaking Porridge, but Ronnie Barker's character is going to be played by Kevin Bishop.
No.
Yeah.
What?
That's the worst choice anyone's ever made in their life.
Do it.
The man's not an actor.
Yeah.
No.
What the hell? Adam, what were you
going to say? Sorry, I was just going to stick my neck out there and say, these are all going to be dog shit, aren't they? I'm going to make that bold prediction now. Although, we are not going to be talking about those on the sort of DVD box set in a year's time.
Ben,
these will not. Classics.
Ben texted me yesterday when I was up to my arms in disinfectant and rabbit shit, and he said, put BBC Parliament on, they're replaying the 1966 election as originally broadcast. And it sounded so good. Like, the idea of going back and replaying things, I think is a great idea. I don't know why we have to reboot things that are very good. Like, for example, if they were to put, in line with the election, if they were to put the same evening's programmes exactly as it happened on the night that Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, I'd be hooked to it for, like, 5 hours, don't you think?
Yeah. It's a really good idea.
They've done that a couple of times with sporting events, sort of on anniversaries of cups and stuff like that. They've replayed original footage and original media coverage almost over sort of 24 hours on the website. And it happens a lot in sport, but yeah, I guess it's going to happen a lot in other sort of cultures as well.
Tell them, Jamie.
There's a great documentary by ESPN, and it follows what was on TV during the O.J. Simpson when he was on his Bronco heading down the highway trying to chase away from the police. And everything that was on TV on that day, it's like a two-hour documentary, and you flick between all these different sporting events and all these different TV programs. And in between, it's just every now and then O.J. in his Bronco. And it's just really interesting to see like how people would have like consume this weird event. It's really good, actually.
Well, we discussed this previously when I mentioned Grease Live, but all the challenges of creating event TV now to compete with the box set world, that's a really good way of doing it. I would totally tune in to watch, like, you're going back in time. Watch your TV as they did in 1956 or whatever. Cool.
That's what I never get with the reboots. Is I think in their minds, I'm thinking, well, if we reboot all these classic sitcoms, people might go back and watch the originals. But actually, they'll just go, this is rubbish. I'm glad I never watched the originals. And we'll just put people off them.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. Which brings us to another question. What TV series would you bring back? Would you reboot? What actually just suffers by its age but is actually superb?
The Prisoner, I definitely think. Oh, except they did remake that recently and it was rubbish.
Okay, there you go.
Damn, that didn't work.
Yeah, wow.
I've ruined my own idea.
Focus grouped it and ruined it.
I know.
What about Quantum Leap? Could you bring Quantum Leap?
It's something I've talked about with people.
Write Quantum Leap in an envelope. And,
Adam, you've gone.
When you said that, open it.
You've gone under a sock. Can you please?
Adam's in a bag.
Can everyone try and control your
Let me
devices?
Out, Matt. Let me out.
Matt, you've had this conversation with people.
We talked about Quantum Leap and how you would do it, but I don't understand how it could happen. I just feel like those shows are of a period and they come with a certain charm which you just can't recreate.
Piggy would just be Siri. now.
The one I would do is, and it's not a box set per se, but the Crystal Maze. I'd like to see that redone with some really imaginative shit.
Just bring it back. Me and Jamie looked into this on our show once. We tried to start a campaign to bring it back. And the truth of the matter is that the TV company who owns the rights to it won't do anything with it. I think that's what we found out.
They've got a live one in London now, haven't they? You can see the King's Cross, and you can go and do it live.
But it's such an expensive TV show to pull off that it's not, you know, it's not
worth not viable.
It, so they think. But I think, forget it, fund the shit out of that thing. It'll be brilliant.
Take what you've learned from Total Wipeout and Takeshi's Castle and put it all in there. Wrap it all into one giant death trap.
Oh, is Richard O'Brien still alive? Is he still around? I sort of imagine he's just still trapped in one of the elements of the Crystal Maze. And
but that'll be the other thing. They'll bound to have discussed it, and he'll have said, "Of course I'll do it, but for £15 million, you know." Probably, I imagine. Let's talk about 30 Rock. That's what we're here to talk about this week. Tiernan, Adam and Jamie have all watched 30 Rock. Is that correct?
Indeed.
And
yes.
Matt? No, I've only seen two episodes of it.
Oh, okay. Tiernan's only seen two. Matt, how many have you watched?
Oh, I've seen four series.
Oh, sorry. Right, I got you and Tiernan the wrong way around. Okay, so Tiernan and I are the guinea pigs this week. I think that because I'm the guinea pig this week, I should hand over the reins of host to my compadre, Jamie Atherton. Let's see if he can hold this shit together.
Oh, welcome to the pod.
Make Howl do the news.
Howl, first of all, as you are one of the new watchers, why don't you describe 30 Rock to everybody else?
Okay, it's a TV show based in New York. It's a TV show about a TV show. So Tina Fey is the showrunner of a comedy that's called something to do with girls, or
The Girly Show.
Thank you. And Tina Fey runs it. Alec Baldwin has been brought in as like the studio chief, and he is starting to interfere with things. So clearly, based on the first episode, this is going to be a story about Tina and friend trying to run their show, but the studio boss, Alec Baldwin, who's a larger-than-life character, getting in the way or not with that process. Is that right?
That's quite an accurate summation of the first episode. Tiernan, why don't you give us your thoughts on it?
That's one of the strongest pilots I've seen of anything in ages. I feel like a bit of an idiot that I haven't watched it before, actually. I found it incredibly funny from pretty much the first couple of seconds. From the opening sequence where Tina Fey...
Can I stop you
someone,
just for one second? Is there anything you can do to better your signal?
My signal?
Yeah, is everyone else hearing Tiernan broken up?
Yeah, he sounds like he's behind a waterfall.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't know.
You sound better now.
That's better.
Is that better?
You need to check your plumbing, Matt.
I have just ever so slightly moved. Is that?
Well, that's brilliant, yeah.
Well, there you go. Good. Apparently, I was sitting in a way that blocks Wi-Fi. I must have a secret plate in my head or something. Right. Yeah.
Just take another step up Matthew's basement stairs.
That is what it is. It's this metallic liquid I'm having with the egg is obviously interfering. I just thought it's even like from the very intro bit, which has Tina Fey going to buy a hot dog and a guy pushes in the queue in front of her, so she ends up buying all of the hot dogs despite him. That is amazing. You know, it's just got such a bit like lots of the other sitcoms we talked about, Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Parks and Rec. It's got that lovely... strong American sitcom feel of having gags every other second, but without it feeling forced. It doesn't feel like any of those are crowbarred in. It feels very natural to the characters to be that kind of witty with their repartee. And again, just a lovely range of people. You know, everyone seems very, very different. Everyone seems very distinctive. It's brilliant. I was really pleased with that. I immediately watched episode two straight away afterwards. Yeah, it was very good.
What's Jamie, interesting about sorry about that, Tina, and I left you hanging. What's interesting about that first about 30 Rock is when it first started, it's about like making a comedy show. It started the same time as Studio 60 on Sunset Strip, the Aaron Sorkin disaster, and it's so much better at capturing that world than Aaron Sorkin managed with his like attempt at looking at the comedy, creating a comedy show. And he does it without being any, no pretensions. It's just this world of just really funny, quirky individuals and that corporate world that's above it all and everything. It really captures that sort of mixture perfectly without having to be a big diatribe by Aaron Sorkin about creativity.
It doesn't try and do it in any seriousness, though, does it? Yeah. It doesn't take itself seriously. There's surreal things happening and very strange, zany characters.
Even in the way that Alec Baldwin's character comes from making microwave ovens, you know, like it's that lovely, he's the corporate man, but he's come from that background. Every little element of it is slightly surreal, just slightly kooky. It's not, you know, it's not, as just as you're saying, Matt, there's no kind of serious angle to it. It's lovely.
What did you make of Tracy Morgan? Did anyone have an opinion on him?
Yeah, he was all right. I thought that he was a bit overplayed, and I thought I differ from Tiernan. You know, I thought this was good. Thought it was funny, but I could actually see the gags, like Studio 60 has for me. I enjoyed Studio 60 more. The first episode than this. I feel like this shows its age slightly. I can't believe they were made at the same time. Were they really made at the same time?
Yeah.
They were. So 30 Rock completed its victory by getting Aaron Sorkin in as a guest star by about season five and doing a really Aaron Sorkin sort of scene in which they reflect on how hard it is to get a show off the ground. Like they're both in there pitching new shows and it really sort of, it's Sorkin rolling over and accepting that he absolutely had his ass spanked on that idea.
Really?
Really,
well,
yeah.
I feel like it's your fault, Adam, that I didn't feel more towards it. I thought it was
good. I probably overhyped it for you. I've been recommending it for so many years to you. That
you've hyped it a lot.
It's difficult to like it.
Yeah, and I did like it, and I thought, okay, all of these characters are going to grow, and I can see, like Tiernan says, the idiosyncrasies of like Alec Baldwin's character is great and everything, but there was just an element to it that, you know, when a stand-up comic makes a sitcom and you're aware that the jokes are being written, so like that hot dog stand joke, Tina Fey gets the son at the front and she buys all the hot dogs. They're just saying that I was always very aware that this was like being written by comedians, if you know what I mean. But
it's a show by comedians about comedy, so it's that you really sort of sense that it is a comedian's kind of show. Like you've got all these characters, and it's fine for them to be funny, smart characters because they're meant to be smart, funny characters who write gags. So the fact that they speak in gags and it's only, you know, 10 seconds between each gag is kind of expected. And I think the first season is really just sort of quite scattergun and quite laugh out loud.
Adam, what are you doing with your frigging? Can you tell us what your microphone setup is, please?
Microphone.
Tell me what exactly. Describe yourself right now.
It's a tablet.
What are you doing with that tablet?
I'm holding
it. Submerge it underwater.
Is
it?
Hang on.
There. What have you just done?
Are you rubbing it on your genitals?
Oh, that's not how it works.
Whatever you've just done, just leave it like that. Okay.
Right. Okay.
I really hope you're holding it in a very uncomfortable position.
Yeah, I'm hanging out my window. Between my arse, no.
I am not rushing back to it in the same way that, you know, at the moment Parks and Rec has got me absolutely, completely hooked. And I went back to Modern Family the other night and thought it really wasn't very good compared to the pace and the jokes in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Brooklyn Nine-Nine has started to ruin Modern Family for me.
Yeah, just a detour onto Modern Family. Like, I've been watching it quite a bit lately, and I sit there now and I don't laugh, but I appreciate that it's good. And I find that I've come away. The only time I ever laugh is when Phil Dunphy's in it, and that's about it, really. Because I don't know why, but it isn't that funny, but it is very well made and it's very well acted.
Yeah.
I found it gets a bit stuck in its situation.
Yeah.
I got a bit bored of just seeing each different couple argue every episode. Do you know, it's not, whereas Brooklyn Nine-Nine has a nice variety to it because of its premise. And I think having watched two episodes of 30 Rock, I presume that's kind of the same with that as well. But Modern Family is just the same characters having, you know, quite nice lives and getting annoyed with each other.
Modern Family, even more than Parks and Rec for me, takes advantage of the documentary theme to allow itself to do jokes that it shouldn't actually be able to do, and it doesn't justify the fact that it's a documentary in any way.
Yeah. Same with Parks and Rec. The knowing look at the camera, I could easily lose in everything now. Ever since The Office, really, I could lose that. But
what I mean, I don't have a problem with the knowing look at the camera. But The Office justified itself brilliantly in the sense that you could understand the documentary. The documentary made sense.
Yeah.
It was a shit documentary, but it made sense in the context of British television. Whereas I don't know who's watching this documentary about this family.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, and I also think Modern Family perhaps suffers from a big star LA thing. Like, I feel like I look at all the characters and it's become very much about these superstars playing these parts, and there's less, like in Brooklyn Nine-Nine and in Parks and Rec, you get the feeling that people, the gloves are off and they don't give a shit and they are trying to out-funny each other, whereas this feels like they're trying to play their parts really well, for which they're getting $10 million an episode or whatever it is.
There's a point in a lot of comedy series where they stop trying to be funny and start trying to be clever. Like you say, they kind of exhaust the situation that they've set up. Because I know sort of in Modern Family, they started doing the episodes where it was entirely through their screens, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember there was an episode where everything was just what they would see on it? And it's clever, but you kind of think, same with 30 Rock, the point where it goes into live shows, or there's shows which are entirely a reality TV show set within that TV show.
I think by the time we'd got to those things with 30 Rock... Oh, sorry.
No, go on.
I think by the time we'd got to those things with 30 Rock, it had already lost its core and what made it so good in the first place. Like, I've watched five series of it, but I only liked four. And yeah. I haven't carried on watching it. But I think, Hal, if you can just reach a little bit further into this bucket of sand, you're going to find a diamond, and it largely it is in the shape of Alec Baldwin's perfect head, because I'm buoyed by the fact that Tiernan found the pilot so good, but actually I think it's not a very good pilot in the sense of, like, the best stuff is round the corner. Like the mid part of the first series into the end of the second series is just amazing. Some of it. Yeah. And Alec Baldwin, there's an episode, it's only about four or five in, where he has to record an info thing for GE. He's just like giving a talk about it. And so he has to be talking to camera. And I'm not going to go any further into detail about it, but he is singularly brilliant in this show. And I had no idea. I'd totally forgotten about him in Beetlejuice, and I had no idea that he had any kind of comedy chops whatsoever. But he's amazing in the show. And have you seen his episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's what sold the show to me in the first place. Really? It's just brilliant.
I think he's such an actor in the Insecure sense. You know, in that Comedians in Cars, he's like, "Oh, I'm shit, Jerry. You're brilliant, and I'm just shit." Like he seems quite insecure with his talent.
That's interesting. I disagree completely. I think he seems really self-assured, and he's kind of poking fun at the fact that Jerry's made all this money out of essentially not being talented.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you should watch it again.
Well, I've watched it three or four times, so I'm pretty comfortable.
I was just saying, going on the Alec Baldwin thing, you do, the first time you watch any episode of 30 Rock, for me, sort of the first series, you spend going, that's Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
wow. Yeah. And then actually, it really is a series that I've just rewatched it, including right up to season 7, which I hadn't seen before. And you kind of forget to go, there's Alec Baldwin being funny. You just go, this is just brilliantly constructed comedy, both gag by gag and actually in terms of them creating an arc and the kind of relationship between those two central characters that you do weirdly start to care for. It does dip a little bit, sort of season... On rewatching season 4, it's actually still pretty funny. But at the time, I think you're kind of waiting for it to fail a little bit. Season 7 is actually really funny again. They tie all this stuff back together. It's one of those where you know it's a final season and they do sort of half as many episodes as ever and they just really pack it full of good stuff.
A pretty reasonable barometer for how good the series is if you watch Tracy Morgan's weight. Because he's pretty thin and athletic in the first couple of seasons, and I was it Jamie? Did you say that you didn't particularly like him? You thought it was quite an overdone performance.
I like Howell.
Howell didn't like it. Mm-hmm. I think he's really funny in the first two series. Yeah. Like his madness is just really nicely played, but he gets more and more annoying. He gets very Zach Braff in the third and fourth series, I think, and. No, that's a terrible thing.
Oh, okay.
But what I was going to say is that I think your initial characterization of the show as being about the kind of
the joke,
back and not the joke mechanism, no, the back and forth between the studio exec and the writers, and also something that Adam was saying about how it's a show about funny people doing funny stuff. Mm. Like really, there's very few episodes which are about the writing of the show or kind of, you know, writers being writers.
Yeah.
It's all just capers that take place in that particular setting. It's a very traditional sitcom in that, unlike something like The Larry Sanders Show, which we did sort of think we were going to talk about, which is very much about the power and the interplay in those.
Whose cat was that?
That was my cat, just underscoring my speech neatly.
It always does that when you're boring it.
Let it listen to Howl for a while.
Say, Matt, Jamie, you're a terrible host. Terrible. You know, you've asked literally one question, and now Matt and Adam have had to try and stumble back towards Gary Shandling, which...
He's letting the conversation flow nicely without imparting his own personality on it and his own opinions overriding it like that.
Or every now and again taking 10 minutes to chug out a worthless metaphor about lights or sand.
I think that... what are we talking about again? 30 Rock. So yeah, I'll carry on watching it because Matt says that there is a diamond in the bucket stand, and I get that. So I will persevere and watch that.
He did say the diamond in the sand by season 5 isn't good. I don't know if he tried to eat that diamond by that point or something. Definitely went wrong. Episode 2, which I watched this afternoon, is better than episode 1. I think it's great. I'm definitely going to watch it all.
Oh, look, I've got a question for you, right? And Adam's not allowed to answer this. If 30 Rock was, as Adam states, the beginning of a lot of things that I really like now, Are the recent things better? Is it really worth my effort to go back and watch all this stuff that inspired just for the sake of Alec Baldwin?
It's definitely as good as Brooklyn Nine-Nine, definitely.
Okay.
And I think like one of the reasons I think I enjoyed episode 1 of 30 Rock so much is having watched Kimmy Schmidt and getting all of Tina Fey's kind of humour in that. I think then 30 Rock does feel like a diluted version of it. In a sense, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
That's a statement Adam made when he was last on, but I'm watching this straight away and I'm going, they're totally different things. Yeah, Kimmy Schmidt is much more of a fiction than this, surely, isn't it?
No. Wait until you get... Like, there's episodes coming up where they go to a party for the horrifically inbred prince of Eastern European country,
right.
And it's like a champagne reception, and you meet Alec Baldwin's ex-wife, played by Isabella Rossellini, and it's this one of these characters' eyebrows falls off. It's just it's hilarious. It's really, really funny. And right. It's very, very surreal and not, it goes completely off the rails.
Fine.
Stick with it, Howell. It's brilliant. It's got a wonderful... I think the biggest similarity to Kimmy Schmidt is the pace of it. It's got that pace of humour. Mm. Like it's quick and it's... It really, like, you feel you're in New York when you're watching it. You really get that feeling of this very sort of active world that's a bit aggressive, and this woman who's like a really funny comedian is trying to create something that she's proud of rather than go back to amateur dramatics. And it's genuinely, I think Tina Fey's brilliant in it. Like, I had no idea who she was before I watched
it. Yeah, me too.
And I couldn't believe it. I thought she was great.
Spending so much money on iTunes at the moment.
Seriously,
how? No, this is on 30 Rocks on Amazon.
£10 on DVD. Oh, we're on Amazon. I'm not signed up to Amazon. Although my sister is. Maybe I could use
it. Isn't it on Netflix as well? I thought it was on Netflix as well.
No, it's only on the US one.
It used to be, okay. Mm. But also, just one more thing about Tina Fey is, like, I didn't realise how old this was, but... It's really important because Liz Lemon is a loser, and she's allowed to be a loser in a way that a lot of female characters in sitcoms don't get to be. Mm. Do you know what I mean at all? They're allowed to be stupid, but they're not allowed to be insulted about how they look and that kind of thing. You know, Baldwin makes some hilariously scathing remarks about how Liz Lemon dresses and behaves and that kind of thing. Yeah. And this is old, and it's good that it's nice to see.
Yeah.
Stick with it, Howell.
Just one of the most engaging sort of comedy characters I think I've ever come across. Like, really, really rounded character. You genuinely sort of relate to, despite this utterly surreal world that can happen around her. Mm. Like you say, the pacing of it and the tone of it makes it very, very real and compelling, despite the fact it's utterly silly comedy around her.
Okay. Yeah, good.
Lovely. Right, let's move on to Gary Shandling, everybody, and who fits in nicely to this discussion.
That's good hosting, Jamie.
You like it? You like it? Okay, yeah, let's talk.
I was going to take over again at this point.
Let's talk. Howell, please step back a second. I'm hosting here. So, Gary Shandling, who died... I had no idea he was close to death's door. I'm sure we all did.
No,
it's really sad, isn't it? And for me, I never saw the Gary Shandling show, but I saw Larry Sanders... in the 90s when it was on BBC Two at like 11 o'clock at night, and I just couldn't believe what I was watching. It was just sort of such a surreal show to be. I didn't know if it was real or not, because it was like it felt real.
And what then year was it? No,
92, wasn't it? Was
Yeah, so we were 12.
Fuck off, really? Oh my God, that's amazing.
I remember watching it as well when I was 12, and it was, I actually thought it was real.
Yeah, me too. I totally thought it was a real US chat show. Yeah. I had no idea.
Okay.
No idea that it was a sitcom for several episodes.
Christian really wanted to join us for this, didn't he? But he's not there, so it falls upon Tiernan Dewey-Ebb as the other stand-up comic to do like a proper obituary. So.
Oh, that's that's tough. I think that's kind of tough for me in a way, because I don't know a lot of Gary Shandling's stand-up, which is something that I feel quite embarrassed about.
Christian, that was an excellent obituary. Really, really touching, really moving stuff.
Thanks very much.
Although that was too.
So,
sorry, Tim. Said it again. So what would we not have if it wasn't for Gary Shandling?
Dirty Rock.
We wouldn't have The Office. The Office, he was a huge influence on Ricky Gervais. And the kind of, you know, Ricky Gervais is, oh God, if you've ever seen that awkward interview he did with Gary Shandling, which is so painful to watch. But he does say in the kind of the pre-interview bit, like, that Hank from Larry Sanders Show was a huge influence on David Brent. Yeah. That's where he took the entire kind of awkward character from.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, the character of Hank in... Larry Sanders is the greatest piece of writing. I mean, he's just the most tragic comic character. He's so good in it, and Jeffrey Tambor, who plays him, is just he's so brilliant. He's such a sad but like pathetic, and like you like him at times and you feel sorry for him, and then you realize he's a real knobhead, and he's just a brilliant character. And yeah, you can see where David Brent came from. in Hang. For me, he's one of the best characters ever created in comedy. He's just superb.
Mm. I completely agree. Like when he gets his restaurant later in the series and he's sort of talking about the opening and he's got this revolving table system going on or something and he just plows all his money into it and it fails ultimately. And he is an incredible character. He's brilliant.
And it was one of the first shows to play with the idea of celebrity. Like it played. You got David Duchovny would come on as in this homoerotic performance of himself, and you weren't sure what his relationship was with Larry, and all these actors would come on and just play up their own persona and really sort of lampoon themselves. It was just brilliant. It did something before anyone else got there. Certainly Ricky Gervais with extras and stuff like that.
Alec Baldwin's in it, isn't he? He comes on and there's this wonderfully awkward moment where Alec Baldwin says to Shelley, he says, we've got something in common. And Larry kind of goes, Alec used to date my ex-wife. And he's like, oh, no, that wasn't what I was going to talk about at all. And he kind of just has to cut away
you've reminded me of loads of stuff there, but the awkwardness, you know, the entertainment of awkward, how entertaining awkward can be. I can't really think of that having been done. I can't think of it that was one of the big things that he set the ball rolling on, wasn't it, I suppose?
But you know what, what we were talking about last week, where I was saying that I can recognise and I enjoy the brilliance of something like Veep, but I can't quite bring myself to watch 20 episodes of it because I can't deal with all the awkwardness. Mm-hmm. The Larry Sanders Show strikes a brilliant balance with it, where it's there, but it doesn't make you ache with it. And they just have enough of it. Like they have characters like Artie in there who doesn't really have that. He's just a bull running around just tackling people, and he doesn't have any of that awkwardness. But they've got it all in the lead character, so it's there.
Well, it's style. Now those I don't know whether you agree, Tiernan, but the style now of things like Parks and Rec and Veep and even The Office, all of that stuff. The style has become very important. That might be to do with budgets, I'm not sure, but it's very handheld, it's very kooky. We are very aware that we're watching something that has been thought about. It's a self-aware style. What I remember about Gary Shandling was it really was like the big old traditional rolling cameras, and this really could have been shot backstage at a talk show.
I think something really important as well is that Larry Sanders, the character, was confident and very good at his job. Mm. And that's quite different to a lot of sitcoms. You know, if we're looking at, for example, like 30 Rock, where they're kind of, it comes in and things start falling apart and people are a bit rubbish and getting low range, you know, or you look at Parks and Rec where, yes, Leslie Knope ends up being amazing, but she is rubbish in the first season, in the second season. But actually, Larry Sanders Show, he's a really professional host. And it's other people coming in.
And so is Hank.
Ruin things. Yeah, and so is Hank. Absolutely brilliant.
They work. It's slick. It really makes sense as a talk show. That's the brilliance of it. They lampoon it without lampooning it. They just do it perfectly.
Yeah, there's a solidity and a reality to those characters, which are almost really well acted characters rather than, cartoons. Which I think we've got a little closer to. So now, when one of us sort of cheerleads one of these comedies, we say, wait for season three. And the reason for that is that those actors have got really comfortable in their team. So from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec, Chuck, all of those things, the comedy team, when they get really comfortable, the series becomes amazing because they're being really inventive and funny. Whereas this was mirrored Seinfeld in that sense of they took all of the craft really, really heavily seriously from the start, you know?
Yeah, it speaks to what I was talking about earlier as well about the use of the documentary format, because this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Like, they never have something go so catastrophically wrong or so stupid on the show that it doesn't make sense, because you can't imagine a talk show where you know, someone would get mauled by a lion or something like that, yeah. some stupid big thing. But other people let those sorts of things happen. They let someone live in a pit for a year on a documentary. And, it, you know, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Wouldn't happen.
Yeah, all the kind of surrealness, the lovely... I rewatched episode one just the other day, and just the fact that the advert is for something called the Garden Weasel, and that's where the level of silliness is in the... It's so very funny. But that's where it doesn't go to kind of surreal levels or impossible levels. It is just almost very realistic ridiculousness. You know, the naming of things, the kind of people that they encounter, people's behaviour, it's all quite grounded, which is wonderful.
Feels like more of a subtle... world that perhaps maybe that can't exist now because everyone's competing to shout the loudest, you know, but much more nuanced in its observation of life, which does remind you of The Office when you describe it like that, really. And when you describe the, you know, lack of extreme situations, The Office was very similar, I suppose, wasn't it?
Yeah, that The Office is the only one out there that treats its format in the same way, I think. But it comes very close to the line. Like, do you remember the Christmas specials in The Office?
Yeah, when singing and stuff.
The first Christmas special. I remember, I think, Tin, and you and I watched it at uni, and I think we were both disappointed by the first Christmas special.
Yeah, probably.
But then they brought it back in the second one so perfectly.
Can you imagine a Christmas with Matt? Well, I don't think the turkey's as good as last year, do you?
I'm delightful at Christmas. I'm full of... Christmas spirit.
I mean, I was just in the basement.
As long as you don't talk about Larry Sanders, then it's all good.
Yeah, so in your face, Howell.
good. Has anyone else got anything to say about Gary Shandling other than, well, that was sad?
I think
just go on.
So you go, Adam, you go.
No, I was going to say, I was similar to you guys in that I sort of watched a little bit of it in the 90s. I was always a bit thrown about how much of it was meant to be funny, I think, when you were that age, and it was on late and you didn't really have a kind of explanation around what it was. Going back and watching just the first episode the other evening on YouTube, just you realise how brilliant it was and how much I sort of took it for granted and perhaps didn't really appreciate it at all. But you can totally see how shows like 30 Rock could not have existed without it, even down to like Rip Torn as well, who's a fairly major part in 30 Rock as it goes along, his role. I think he's a sort of... Rip Torn isn't the head of a studio there, is he? But there's the same gag about the studio being run as a subsidiary of a different company and all that sort of stuff that you realise is exactly the basis of a lot of the kind of humour that you take for granted in something like 30 Rock. And it also reminded me a little bit of Curb Your Enthusiasm as well.
Definitely.
That's another show probably wouldn't have existed without that kind of groundwork being laid. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm going to go back and watch more of it.
And I think that, like, as far as he goes, the man Gary Shandling, like, he's a hard man. Like, he's awkward in interviews, not just the Ricky Gervais one. He is quite an awkward man to interview. He's very aware of his insecurities. And I think he was quite spiritual, but he was very unsure. He didn't like being questioned that much. And that's why that Comedians in Cars interview with Jerry Seinfeld, I thought it was brilliant because I'd never seen him so disarmed, like, because he was around Jerry Seinfeld, someone he really respected and had grown up with. It was a really nice sort of reminiscence about the growing up together as comedians. And it was just, you've got to watch it if you want to understand who he is. That was just a perfect sort of eulogy for him in a lot of ways.
Oh, I'm going to definitely go and watch that.
It's really good. I didn't realise quite how parallel their careers were as well, that they started stand up exactly the same time. They were filming their shows in opposite lots in the same studio. Like, it was quite remarkable. But yeah, it's a really lovely, really lovely Comedians in Cars.
What a solid output from one studio that those two were being filmed. Seinfeld and that were being filmed next to each other.
That's amazing, and they're filming Brooklyn Nine-Nine there at the moment. You see in the Comedians in Cars when they go past it, it's where Brooklyn Nine-Nine is at the moment, too. Incredible place.
Well, there you go. There you go. Next week, then, what were we going to do this week, Matt?
It was Better Call Saul, wasn't it?
Oh, nice.
So, hopefully, barring any other sudden deaths, next week we'll be talking about Better Call Saul. If you haven't watched it and you want to join us, wouldn't it be great to have a listener of the podcast joining us in the guinea pig chair?
I like that idea.
So literally, if anybody is willing to watch one episode of Better Call Saul, if you haven't watched it, you've got Netflix, and now's the time to start it, then pop us an email, give us your phone number, we might ring you and join you, make you join us next week. You've got till Tuesday night to watch it. I should point that out. You've not got till Friday. Tuesday
no night. Faking, though. You have to have not watched it before.
That's right.
We'll know.
Don't worry, we won't get any emails, Matt. Studio at theboxsetpod.com. Studio at theboxsetpod.com. Emails if you're willing to be that guinea pig.
Any final thoughts from anybody?
Just for any listeners playing along with the when will Howell mention Chuck sweepstake, it was 48 minutes this week. 48 minutes.
I'm going to edit this podcast so that it's definitely just off 48 minutes.
And you'll take out that comment too?
Probably.
No, that's too much work for you.
Good. Well, thank you, everyone. And apologies to our friend Christian, who obviously couldn't get here in time, and he really wanted to talk about Gary Shandling.
Which we will never do again.
You say he's on the bus? Oh, I'm still on my way home. I should be another 10 minutes. That was 1 hour ago.
Yeah, should we be worried? I mean, is there any should we be concerned?
Someone call Christian.
Maybe his bus can't stop or it'll explode.
Are we going to have to do a tribute show for Christian next week?
Oh, geez. Oh, that's
this isn't what you want to suggest.
Yeah. please do edit that bit.
One day, that comment is going to seem very, very inappropriate.
Broadcast. Keep a hold of it, Hal. Keep a hold of it until it becomes relevant.
I just paste it in. Yeah. Christian, we're waiting for you to die. See you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Who's going to watch Better Call Saul, by the way?
It was me. I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it? You're on next week, then.
Cool.
So I'm not going to be available next week. It's our anniversary.
Well, I suppose we can do it without Jamie.
Yeah, I'm not here next week either because I have to host a bloody gig.
All right, Adam, you're welcome back.
I'm probably on the bedtime routine.
Great, Matt, it's me and you. This is going to be... Oh, imagine the arguments we're going to have for a whole hour.
I can just feel how much I'm not going to like it.
Fireworks. And then just one listener on a phone call is sat in the middle getting more and more awkward. See you next week.
See ya.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.